Hello, friends, and welcome to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting today live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that if we all work together, we can make this earth a much happier and beautiful place. I want to thank everyone so much for listening today. Out of This World Radio was one of the most popular talk shows in the Seattle area, and we now have over 250,000 listeners in over 90 countries. And I just want to thank everyone so much with my heart for their beautiful support. From now until about 2:30 p.m. Pacific time today, I'll be interviewing Ernest Tahoe. He's a wonderful Hopi Native American elder who will be talking about the importance of clean water and humanity's future. Then from 2:30 to 3, I'll be interviewing one of the world's most famous scientists, Nassim Harriman, who will be talking about the nature of reality and new discoveries in the world of science and physics. It's not the complete interview. I'll be playing the rest of the interview as well. This is part one. Part two will be broadcast a week from today. Then during the second hour from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, I'll be interviewing two wonderful gentlemen named Michael Lund and Pat Donvillo from the Alive Water in beautiful Vancouver, Canada. Alive Water produces these incredible and amazing water filters that literally makes water come alive with high vibration and many amazing healing qualities. Their work is based on the work of the famous Austrian scientist Victor Schomburger, who passed away in 1958. And some say that he rediscovered the elixir of life in water that was allegedly discovered by Ponce de Leon in Florida in the 16th century. Before we start, I'd like to thank everyone's support so much for this radio program, because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate your help and support, because I know together we can create a much better and happier world. And with that, I'd like to really thank my friends Corey and Saul in Kirkland for their beautiful support, as well as my wonderful friends Marion Elias in Costa Rica, Bradley and Gemma in London, England, Jan Erik and Emma Louise in Norway, and everyone around the world who've helped me raise consciousness to make this world a much better and happier place. I want to thank everyone for coming to my Galactic Wisdom Conference last week, and it was a fantastic success. And the vibrations there were so high. It was really everyone had a really wonderful time. I got many compliments, and next year I'll be having my 6th annual Galactic Wisdom Conference on March 13th, 14th, and 15th at likely the same location in Olympia, Washington at 9101 Stillicum Road. And for more information, we'll be updating the website soon. I have an early bird special for the conference, just $75 for vendors and attendees. And if you register soon, you'll be able to get that deeply discounted rate. With that, I'd also thank my dear friend Carol, who's designing my website, providing wonderful support. My friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, and of course, Eric at KKNW, both Erics whose help and support, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. I'd also like to please send lots of love, light, and positive energy to Carol, my web designer who was in a car accident recently. I know your good positive energy really help her. And also, if you could send lots of energy to my friend Emmy in Seattle, she's been through some, she needs your positive energy. Love and light. That would really help. I want to tell everyone I have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. If you'd like to get in touch with your angels and loved ones who've passed on and get some good spiritual advice, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793, or toll free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. This coming Sunday, from April 21st to the 28th, I'll be taking a group of people to visit sacred sites and meet with Hopi elders in Arizona. We'll meet in Sedona and then travel north to the Hopi. The cost is just $200 per person, with half the proceeds going to the Hopi for clean water and the other half the proceeds going to a nonprofit children's charity, the Emoto Peace Project, which teaches love and gratitude to children around the world. If you'd like to come, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Or you can call me at 509-750-9793. Briefly, before we go to Ernest in Arizona, he's waiting patiently for us, I wanted to tell you about some wonderful psychic and spiritual fairs coming up. Tomorrow, on Saturday, April 20th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., I'll be at the Tacoma Craft and Psychic Fair at 5405 South Puget Sound Avenue in Tacoma. I'll be doing readings, and I'll have a fair special of only $10 for 10 minutes. Michiko Hayashi from the Moto Peace Project, all the way from Japan, will also be there selling these beautiful children's books for only $5 a piece. If you're on YouTube now, you can see the book here. It's full of beautiful water crystals. She'll also be giving wonderful hot water healing sessions. These are the same sessions that Dr. Masaru Emoto used to successfully treat, heal, and diagnose 10,000 people before he passed away in 2014. If you miss her this Saturday, the next best way to reach her would be to fly to Tokyo, which is considerably more time and money. So if you are in the area and would like a Hado treatment, please stop by. I know she'd enjoy seeing you. Would you like to say a few words, Michiko?
Oh, yes. Well, thank you so much, Ted. I will be with Ted in Tacoma tomorrow between 9 or 10 o'clock and 5 o'clock.
Right.
So, and giving Hado sessions, I will be making them private, structured, customized water to heal people. So please stop by and come see me and say hi.
Right. Okay, great. Just briefly before we talk to Ernest in Arizona, I'll be returning to Mount Shasta July 2nd through July 8th and again from September 5th to the 11th, 2019. Mount Shasta is a very special and beautiful place where miracle healings do occur from the Talosians and the wonderful people of Telos and the Hollow Earth. In fact, last September, for decades, for like 40 years since high school, I've had a blurry, farsighted vision in my right eye, 20/50 vision. And last September, the Telosians Adama, the high priest of Telos, asked me if I wanted a healing. And I said I would love a healing. And so he healed the eyesight in both eyes. And I now have 20/10 crystal clear vision in both eyes. So other miracle healings have occurred. There was a lady who was crippled for the past 25 years. She was on my trip in September 2017 to Mount Shasta. It's a long story what happened, but she was contacted by the Sasquatch and the Talosians late one night, and they asked her if she'd like a new pair of legs. She said yes, and they gave her literally a new pair of legs. After the experience, she now walks normally and doesn't need crutches or a wheelchair anymore. If you'd like to go, please send me an email to outoftheisworld1150@gmail.com. Or you can call me in the United States at 509-750-9793. Both trips in July and in September 2019 are filling up, and I intend to keep it a small group. So if you'd like to go, please email me or contact me as soon as possible. The cost is only $200 per person. And with that, I'd like to bring on my good friend, Ernest Howell, from the Hopi tribe in Arizona. Ernest, how are you doing today?
Hello, Ted. How are you doing? I'm doing great.
Oh, good. It's good to talk to you, Ernest. I'm so happy you could come on today. You know, one thing I forgot to do before we start, there's a beautiful water song to start us off, because we'll be talking about water and for the Hopi now. And Eric, I'm sorry I didn't tell you earlier to play it. Could you play the first minute or so of the Japanese water song? Wait till Eric gets the... here we go. We'll play this quickly, and then we'll come right back to Ernest. Thank you so much, Eric, for your wonderful help with that. Real quick, I've got a 528 hertz tuning fork. It's a love tuning fork. 528 is the frequency of love, and along with a Lemurian crystal from Mount Shasta infused with the love and light from the Talosians. I'm going to hit this three times, and everywhere you'll be listening to it, you will feel the vibration of love coming through. For those of you interested, 528 is the vibration of love, and I'll hit this now and to cover the entire planet in love vibration. Ah, isn't that nice? Oh, beautiful, beautiful vibration. Thank you, Michiko, for letting me use that. Ernest, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Ted. How about you?
Oh, I'm fine, fine. It's good to be back in the studio again. And tell us about the water filters and how people are getting clean water now. And would love to hear some about some of the things you've been working on there on with the Hopi.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. Since our project started back last year, we got the big donation from Teresa.
Right.
That $30,000. We were able to buy 150 water filter units. About 100 of them will handle the Arsenic 5, which is in the Second Mesa area. And in their water, they also have some vanadium in it, which is also a metallic metal in the water, and we were also able to buy 50 of the arsenic eyes and uranium units for the First Mesa area. Our level of arsenic is pretty high, averages around 15 to 18 parts per billion with the arsenic 3, which is really toxic and a smaller molecule than the arsenic 5. So with that, the filters need to be a little bit smaller, so it'd be able to catch the arsenic 3 molecules passing through it. We also got a portable solar unit, which we're able to transport around from First Mesa to Second Mesa at various spots. I'm still in the process of looking for various spots to hold what we're calling it is a water store, where we will hook up the solar unit and be able to produce clean water for the communities around the Hopi Reservation.
Well, that's wonderful news. That's such good news, Ernest. Do you need more funds? Are you able to cover the entire Hopi Reservation with these water filters, or do you need... You need more help? I guess you always need more help, but I wanted to ask you that in case people wanted to donate.
Yes, we are looking still for more help in achieving our goal of producing water filters for the community. First Mesa area, we have like about 500, I think it's like 540 homes that are connected to the water infrastructure there. Mm-hmm. Second Mesa, we have like 435 homes connected to their water infrastructure. So as you can see, we're way short of the limit that we need. I think the total is about 800 filters, both for First and Second Mesa. So we are in need of more assistance on raising funds to purchase these filters for the community.
Okay. How much ballpark would you need? Like 50,000, 20,000, 10,000?
Well, actually, when I did the budget just recently and took the numbers from some documents that I had as far as like the amount of homes and community members, like as far as census go, we're looking like about, I think it was like about 134,000 altogether to cover all 800 homes and stuff. But right now we're looking at different areas. As Mr. McLaughlin from the Clean Water Foundation, he's in the process of reaching out to the Seminole Tribe in Florida to see if they would be able to assist with some fundraising events there. I'm also looking into some grants that I'm applying for. Writing grants isn't that easy, so it's taking me a little bit more time than I wanted to, but I'm getting some assistance from a lady from Tucson. She's been really helpful. She does photography, and she does photos in water. And this is without a camera. She has specialized paper. And she works at night, goes in the rivers, the lakes, ponds, whatever, and she exposes these paper with a flash, as her husband does on shore. And she comes out with some very abstract photos of water type. And right now she took some samples from First Mesa and Second Mesa, both filtered water and non-filtered water. And right now she's in the process of processing those papers. What she has told me so far is that the images are coming out really abstract, something that she's never seen as far as the colors. So something like that we can use in my presentations that I've been doing around both on the Hopi Reservation and off the reservation. And with those photos, I can use in my presentations to, you know, show the comparisons between the arsenic 3, arsenic 5, non-filtered water to filtered water. So I got like several ways I can incorporate it into my presentation.
Well, I know from my research into the military-industrial complex here in the United States, the U.S. government spends $3,000 per minute to fly a B-52 or for chemtrails. So if one of these chemtrail planes spraying the chemtrails illegally across the United States just stopped for 1 hour, that would save taxpayers in this country $180,000, and that money could theoretically go to buy water filters for in the rest of the Hopi Reservation.
Yeah, that is very true. That is interesting.
You know, there's a speech that was a famous speech given by President Dwight D. Eisenhower in 1959. It was called his Plowshares speech, and I don't have it with me now, but if you look it up on the web, Google it, you can find it. And he talked about how every dollar spent on the military means $1 less for social services, education, the environment, and clean water as well for people like in your community. So it's not that I don't think the problem in the United States is not that we don't have enough money or resources. It's just a matter of spending priorities. Which is more important, flying a B-52 across the United States to illegally spray chemicals all over us here in a chemtrail program, or by stopping the program for 1 hour, you could provide more than enough money to buy clean water for all the Hopi. Just 1 hour. So,
exactly.
You know, but we get by somehow. But I know that there's everyone listening to this show, we had a tremendous response a year ago when I started broadcasting about the need for clean water for the Hopi. And I want to thank Teresa so much. What a beautiful lady from Idaho for donating $30,000. And we also had some smaller contributions come in as well. The Hopi tribe, as you know, tell us what happened back in 2015. Vernon told me about it too, where the tribe tried to obtain monies from the federal government, but were turned down. Is that, I remember kind of what happened back then?
When this whole arsenic issue was brought up back in 2001, that's when the EPA dropped the arsenic levels from 50 parts per billion to 10 parts per billion.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, the Hopi tribe had been out of compliance, and they've been trying to get funds from the BIA, the government, EPA and stuff like that. And back in 2015, the tribe did file a lawsuit in court, and they were denied funding at that time. I'm not really sure exactly why they were denied.
Yeah.
But since then, they've been trying to work with IHS, CIA, EPA, and trying to accomplish this hemp project, which is supposed to bring clean water. It does have arsenic in it, but the levels are like 2 parts per billion, and, mm-hmm. which is way lower than the EPA standard.
Right.
So with that, the source of water is like 15 miles north of the First and Second Mesa area.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, that's what they're trying to do, is get funding to get that water line fixed and get the water pumped over to the First and Second Mesa areas.
Well, and we wish him well. We wish him well. But I'm so glad for the contributions that came in. And if people are interested in donating, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, because I know if we all work together, we can create a much better and happier world. The other issue, too, that Vernon and other tribal elders told me about, Ernest, are the Navajo, who are right next to the Hopi there. And Vernon tells me that they have the same water issues that the Hopi do. Do you know much about that? I don't know too much about their water issues there.
Both the Navajo and Hopi share the same aquifer.
Okay.
Navajo aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
More of the communities on the Navajo reservation around the Tuba City, Cameron, Loop area on the west side are dealing with a lot of abandoned uranium mines. And a lot of them haven't been properly closed or cleaned up. So they're facing a lot of issues with uranium there.
Mm-hmm.
As well as on the east side, along Hard Rock, Sienta, and some places up in New Mexico area, too. They're dealing with the same issues as well, uranium and arsenic. I also been researching around and getting contact with different people from help from others, and I did come across some issues as well as in Laguna, which is in New Mexico. They also have abandoned uranium mines, and as well to toxic water with arsenic and uranium in it.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much there's a lot of indigenous communities that are dealing with a lot of mining issues, regardless if it's coal or uranium, stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I find it inexcusable that Native American communities like the Hopi and the Navajo and other communities in the United States do not have clean drinking water. With all the resources that the United States has, there's no excuse in the world why they can't have clean drinking water. If the government, like back in 2015, said that they couldn't provide the monies to provide for clean water for the Hopi, I don't accept that as a reason. Unless you wanted to be cynical about it and they wanted people to get sick on the Hopi Reservation. Now, that's another policy that, of course, that was done in the 19th, 18th, and 19th centuries that the U.S. government did. They wanted to wipe out Native Americans to take the resources and land. And if that's a policy, that's not a very good policy, and I don't think any Americans would agree with that today. I don't think, again, there's any reason why they can't have clean drinking water. So that's why I'm asking everyone today, if they've got a few dollars, please contact me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to put them in touch with Ernest and other Hopi elders who are working hard to clean the water on the Hopi Reservation and give them a quality of life that they deserve, and that they shouldn't certainly be exposed to any hazardous chemicals and pollutants.
Yeah, most definitely. So far, this project has been doing very well, especially with, you know, your voice and your announcement spreading the awareness of what we're dealing with in Arizona. And especially with Leon. Leon's been magnificent. He's been doing a lot of outreach.
Oh, yeah.
Getting in touch, you know, a lot of people, which is very helpful to this project. So it seems like doors just keep opening. Once one closes, something else will open.
Right.
And it's been continuous. And, you know, I'm very appreciative to you guys for helping us with this issue that we needed to address a long time ago.
Well, I want to speak on behalf of all my listeners worldwide, and there's over 250,000 people listening to you now, Ernest, and we want to say unequivocally that we all love you and want to help you get the clean water that you all need. Again, in a country like the United States, I don't think there's any excuse whatsoever for people to drink carcinogenic, arsenic, and radioactive water in this country.
Yes, yes, definitely. And that goes the same way with, you know, Flint, Michigan, you know, with their water. How long has that been going on?
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, one of the problems is that there are still companies out there who look at water as a private thing where they can own it. Nestle's come up and said that water itself is not a public right. But there's a wonderful professor named Professor Giuseppe Vitellio from Salerno, Italy. He's one of the world's most famous physicists. And I met Professor Vitellio when I was at a water conference last October in Bulgaria. And he's written a petition to the United Nations saying that the right to clean air and clean water is a human right, which should be incorporated into the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. If you'd like to sign his petition, please go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And then if you go to the landing page on the right-hand side, you'll see a little, you'll see a picture of two hands holding the earth. And just click on that, and you'll be able to sign his petition. That's going to the United Nations. He's already gotten many famous scientists, including Noam Chomsky from MIT, Professor Jerry Pollack, a world-famous water professor at the University of Washington, and many, many others have signed it. Ernest, we're getting short on time now, but I'd love to have you wrap up your wonderful interview today, and perhaps you can give out your email, too, so people can contact you if they need more information. Hello, Ernest, are you there? Okay, we may have lost Ernest. We'll see if we can get him back. But anyway, Ernest is a wonderful man. He's with the he's an elder with the Hopi tribe, and he's a good man. I really like another gentleman I've been talking to, Turnus Vernon, who was good friends with Dr. Emoto before Dr. Emoto passed in 2014. We'll be going down. I'll be going down on Sunday, April 21st, to visit the Hopi and meeting with Hopi elders there as well as the Sedona. If you'd like to come along and meet Hopi elders and talk about their view on humanity's future and the need for clean water, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Also, on April 27th, we'll be having a big event on the Second Mesa in the Hopi Reservation area, where we'll be giving presentations on the importance of clean water. And looks like we've gotten Ernest back again. Wonderful. So if you can, and the water will be safe during our trip to Hopi. Ernest, are you there?
Yeah, Chad, I'm back.
Okay.
Lost connection.
Okay, yeah, sorry I lost you there. Sorry I lost you there. I wanted to say we've just got a few minutes left, Ernest, but please, I'd love to have you wrap up your beautiful interview today. Maybe, and perhaps give people your email so they could contact you if they need more information.
Excuse me? Could you repeat that again?
Yeah, if you could wrap up your interview today and perhaps give your email out to people where they could contact you for more information.
Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, thank you, Ted, for having me, and, you know, I'm glad to let people know a little update on where we're at with this project, and hopefully we can get more help with raising the funds and stuff to purchase more filters. People can reach me at etaho, that's E-T-A-H-O, 44
Okay, great. And they can also reach me, too, if they're interested in making a donation at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Well, Ernest, thank you so much for coming on today, and I appreciate your help, your beautiful work for your people as well. And I know we'll be getting in some more contributions in the future to help you all get clean water.
Yes, great. Thank you, Ted, for having me on, and I hope to see you soon here. When you get here.
Absolutely. We'll see you on the 23rd at the Hopi Cultural Center, and I'll buy you a cup of coffee, too, and breakfast, if you like.
That sounds good. We'll see you then.
All right, my friend. You take care, Ernest. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
I'll do it.
Bye-bye. We also have an event on all day. Will be a big event on the Hopi Land Reservation on April 27th. I'll be giving a lecture on messages from the masters with messages from Professor Albert Einstein, updated messages from my good friend, President Jack Kennedy, and his wife, Jacqueline, the First Lady. Nostradamus, I'll be channeling as well, along with Benjamin Franklin and the Galactic Alliance and many other great spirits. Then Michiko Hayashi will also be giving a children's lecture on the messages from water for little kids there in the area. So, and I know Leon McLaughlin, my good friend at the Washington Clean Water Foundation here in Seattle, will be sponsoring a whole bunch of different musical events. And we also will be having visiting some sacred sites that day and seeing some Hopi sacred dances too. So if you can come to the second Mesa of the Hopi Reservation, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, because I know together we can create a much better and happier world. With that, I'd like to go on to play the first part of my interview with Nassim Harriman. He's one of the world's most famous scientists. He has spent over 30 years researching and discovering connections in physics, mathematics, geometry, cosmology, quantum mechanics, biology, chemistry, as well as anthropology and ancient civilizations. He has a foundation called the Resonance Foundation. Their website is https://resonance, spelled resonance.is/. And that's his Resonance Foundation. He's led to groundbreaking theories, published papers, and patent inventions in unified physics, which are now gaining worldwide recognition and acceptance. This is an interview that I had with him at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles in February 2019. This is the first part. We'll play the second part next week. So, Eric, if you could please start that recording, and then we'll come back at the top of the hour. Thank you so much for listening today, friends.
Hello, friends. I'm at the Conscious Life Expo here in Los Angeles, and I have a wonderful man named Nassim Harriman. He's one of the world's foremost free-thinking and thinking physicists and scientists on basically a new age coming to science here in America and also the world as well.
Yeah, Nassim, it's emerging now.
It's emerging now. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what kinds of trends you see happening.
There's definitely an opening in the physics community. I think there was a realization, you know, and when you looked in the 80s, mid-90s, 2000, early 2000, all this, string theory was really strong, and there was really this feeling you got that in general, the scientific community, the physics community, was fairly convinced that they had it pretty well all figured, and the stuff that wasn't figured yet was going to be figured within the next few years, and you know, it was pretty well all done, and we didn't need to really look for new ideas because it was well on its way with the standard model and everything. And and then there was, you know, a big disappointment and a realization that actually, you know, string theory and other alternative theories and the standard model itself is, you know, missing some big pieces,
sure,
not just small pieces. And, you know, some more data was gathered from cosmological astrophysics and cosmology at the very large scale, and as well from quantum experiments that really confirmed that we're missing a big chunk of the picture. And, you know, although that was disappointing to many physicists, it is, you know, at the same time opening the space for a new understanding to emerge. And approximately, I would say, 5 to 6 years ago, more and more physicists started to talk about a new view of the structure of space-time, where space-time is quantized, where, you know, quantum astrophysics is becoming more and more popular. That is, the idea that, like, astrophysical objects can be described as well at the quantum level, you know, and produce results in astrophysics in which, you know, the classical theories of gravity and electromagnetism can be described more from a quantum physics point of view. Mm-hmm. And so kind of a melt between quantum physics and relativity and Maxwell's equation. And so it's really exciting because this new view is much simpler. It's much more clear. It's very much based on geometry. And it's actually something that Einstein predicted it would happen. He thought that the unification of physics would happen when we would find a fundamental geometric pattern to the structure of space-time, and that it would be described in simple algebraic solutions. Mm-hmm. And so this is emerging now, and you see it happen. You see it, you know, there is lectures and all kinds of papers that are being published that are starting to adopt this view and finding amazing results. And some of the results I've published myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could you share with my listeners, Nassim, what kinds of results have you found?
So basically, what's emerging is that space is not empty.
Okay.
That the material world, which is mostly made out of space, right? Atoms are made out of 99.999999% space. That the space at the quantum level and at the cosmological level is not empty. Mm-hmm. It's full of information. Mm-hmm. And when we say information, we mean energy. Mm-hmm. That is, you can think of the space between you and I right now as, like, empty because you don't experience it directly. But you know very well that it's full of electromagnetic fields, right? There's the light in the room. You know, there is all the radio waves. There's microwave. There's even background radiation from the galaxy, from the universe. I mean, there's all this stuff in the space. So it's not accurate to think of the space as empty. Well, you can imagine that those frequencies are the kind of the longer wavelengths, but you can imagine that there's shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter wavelengths. And then that there's wavelengths that are even shorter than the atomic structure, right? Mm-hmm. And then eventually you get to a fundamental kernel of the structure of, like, the grain of space-time. This is what's being discovered right now.
Wow, amazing.
Space-time is not smooth, as Einstein thought, at the quantum level. It's at the quantum level, it's granular. It only appears smooth at cosmological scale.
Like this table appears smooth, but actually if you looked at the molecules down at the subatomic level, it would be very granular.
Exactly. Right. It's little grains, right? Just like the water in your tub looks smooth, and when you pull the plug, you know, it curves, which is what Einstein described as gravity, the curvature of space-time.
Right.
And then if you put a rubber ducky there, it appears like it's being attracted to the drain because of the surface curving, right? And spinning. But actually, if you look at the water closely, It's made out of little grains we call molecules and atoms, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, a little bit the same for space-time. Mm-hmm. So that it actually, you know, very much quantized. It's like teeny little
quarks.
Smaller than quarks.
Smaller than quarks.
Yeah, like teeny little bits of information, like pixels, but they're like voxels because they have volume, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And each little voxel is like a bit, like a computer bit. Mm-hmm. You know, in some theories they call it qubits. Mm-hmm. And so these little bits of information, what I found is that when they become coherent in a region of space, mm-hmm, like when they start spinning together in a region of space, they make up the subatomic particles that we call matter, and that we call mass, mm-hmm, and they produce forces that we call gravity and electromagnetic fields and the strong and weak force. Mm-hmm. And so that, like, all of the reality we see and its forces and even the concept of time emerge from this fundamental field of information that's prevailing everything, that's inside and outside of everything.
Right.
And this is something I concluded to almost 25 years ago, mm-hmm, and wrote and started writing the equations for. But physicists, very famous physicists with Nobel Prizes and the director of departments are arriving to these conclusions right now, and and it's remarkable because they're brilliant people, and they're, you know, and some of them are starting to speak up, and it's really exciting. Mm-hmm. What I did is that I solved some of these equations. And the result was that I'm able to, like, predict the radius of the proton and the mass of the proton and the radius and mass of the universe and, you know, all these really important constants in the universe, mm-hmm, out of this field. I'm able to extract it, and it's extremely precise.
Nostradamus has told me that we will have time travel by the year 2030. At the current evolution, it'll become a lot more. Well, it's already there. It's already being used by the secret space program. But there'll be disclosure, and other scientists will independently discover it by 2030. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a sequence where the first discoveries in space time, when they do space time travel, they'll actually rip open they'll rip the fabric of space time. Mm-hmm. But it'll be another 15 to 20 years after that when they will learn how to do space time, space travel, or time travel. Without ripping out that
I see.
Thing,
and okay.
And it's already happened because there are instances of there's an instance of a gentleman in Germany in 1857 who was going to a market, smartly dressed, a young man, mm-hmm, and he walks down the street, and before he knows it, he's in New York City in 1952, in the mm-hmm middle of Times Square, walking down Fifth Avenue, and he gets hit by a car and's died.
Oh wow!
And they go through his pockets and find coins from 1857 in Germany, like 95 years earlier. Oh. And the poor fellow fell into a rip in time space that had already been created in the future, but he had stepped into it.
I see.
So there are instances like that which have happened in history. Mm. If you Google them, you do find them.
Okay.
Yeah, you do find them. I was going to my studio here a couple of years ago, and I had a blue bag of thumb drives I use for past programs.
Yep.
And I was walking up to my studio, and in the parking lot, I checked to see if I had that blue bag, and it suddenly just gone out of my bag. Well, and I was a little concerned because I use those things for backup shows and whatnot.
Right.
And about 3 weeks later, I'm going to the studio again, parked in the same spot, walking the same route, and I happen to look at the bag, and it suddenly appeared.
Whoa.
So there's a rift in time-space.
Uh-huh.
Where it went out, and then it went back in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happened before, so people will discover that more and more.
Right.
And that'll be one of the things you'll be discovering here soon. You'll be one of the scientists later next decade, instrumental on time travel, space time travel. But there's going to be new rules on that because let's say you can go back to the Gettysburg address. or you can go to 1937 Nazi Germany. How much can you interfere? Generally, you can't interfere. Just observe. Mm-hmm. Maybe some minor things.
Right. Well, you know, I've been working on gravity control as a result of the equations I wrote, because it says that gravity, the curvature, just like the curvature in the water in your bath, right?
Right.
When you pull the plug.
Right.
The curvature is the result of the molecules of water spinning in that region of the bath. Hmm. You see, but if you don't know that, clearly you can't make something to make the water curve.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But if you realize that it's because of the particles are spinning, you know, and going down the drain, because there's a gradient in the water that you have curvature, then you can start to think, oh, maybe I can modify gravity. And so I've been working on gravity control.
Good.
By, you know, trying to couple to this fundamental field of particle and then, you know, orbiting it so that I would create, you know, an artificial gravitational effect.
Well, let me tell you what they're telling me from the other side.
Okay.
You will discover what they already know in this secret space program about travel, interplanetary and intergalactic travel.
Uh-huh.
And you will discover how that works within 2 years. And within another 3 or 4 years after that, you will be able to build your own device for traveling outside of this planet and to other galaxies.
It's interesting you're saying that, because that's exactly the timeline plan that I have in my laboratory for these discoveries.
Right.
So right. I'm glad I'm getting the confirmation from you. Thank you. I wasn't sure it could happen that quick, but that was what I'm hoping.
A lot of people sometimes, when I was in college, we always had these discussions about whether the human race is intelligent and whether they're service to others and kind and benevolent. And I think they are, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were some negative students in my class that said, many people are stupid, we'll never evolve beyond the cave, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And
we'll always kill each other.
Really kill each other and service to self. You know, mm-hmm. we're always, you know, that's how society has progressed. And I said, no, that doesn't seem right.
Right.
But your work and this timeline and what they're telling me from the other side is that you will independently discover what they've already known in the secret space program for decades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be recognized for that and be rewarded with a lot of government contracts, because they'll want you on board. But by that time, the government, our government in particular, and many institutions will be benevolent and they'll want to help you out. Mm-hmm. And then you won't have any fear of being eliminated or having an accident or anything. You're already protected. But that's the shift is happening now already.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it'll happen already.
Wow.
Yeah, it'll happen.
You know, you're the second person that tells me today that our institutions will become benevolent very,
right.
very soon.
Right.
And you know, I knew that from logic. You know, because you can see that, like, people are changing within, inside the institutions. But I wasn't sure how fast it would happen. And so I'm really excited to hear that. It warms my heart because, I mean, we're all in the same boat.
We are.
You know, we have to transcend some of the ecological difficulties and pickle that we've put ourselves in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I'd also like to share some good news with you.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the late 80s, Dolores Cannon, famous American psychic.
Right. I knew Dolores.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She wrote a book, Conversations with Nostradamus.
3 volumes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I read that from front to cover, and I used to... It was like it was like I tabbed every page, underlined all this stuff and everything.
Many things in there were prophesied, came to.
Were prophesied. So when Professor Albert Einstein first contacted me in February of 2015,
mm-hmm.
It's a long story, everything that happened. I'd been thinking about him that day. I was preparing for my radio show, and I was walking out to through this parking lot in this street area to my car, when suddenly I hear this voice in my head, and I get... I get this because I'm in touch with the other side. I come from a psychic family. And he said, I heard you've been wanting to talk to me. You want to talk to me? Mm-hmm. And I stopped and I said, who's this? He said, this is Professor Albert Einstein. And I said, sure, I'd love to talk to you. So I sat down and we talked for about 3.5 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, and then he said, would you like to meet my friends? And I said, well, your friends are my friends. And so Leonardo da Vinci came through.
Wow.
Yeah, and he said that I asked him about all these fantastic drawings he did back in the 15th, 16th century Italy, and he said that he would time travel, astral travel at night, and go several centuries into the future and see all these fantastic things, then bring them back and draw them.
Oh.
So that's how he was able to see the future.
Mm.
And then he led me in turn to Senator Robert F. Kennedy. They're very close. And then his brother Jack, I once asked about his President Kennedy, and I've been in touch with President Kennedy since then. And then and since then, I've been in touch with Mahatma Gandhi, came to me about 3 years ago. And then I've been in touch with Benjamin Franklin. The Galactic Alliance I've been in touch with about four or five years now. And then the Pleiades, I started communicating with them in 1977 while I was in college.
Oh.
They contacted me.
You mentioned you come from a psychic family?
I come from a psychic family, yeah. It's very normal for me to talk to the other side.
Really?
So, yeah, it is. It's as easy for them me to talk to people who
Your mother or your father?
Foster mother. She used to find missing and lost children in Seattle for the Seattle Police Department.
Oh, wow.
And when they were stuck and couldn't solve a case, they'd come to her and said, look, don't tell anybody, we've hired you. Here's a piece of clothing, here's their picture, what happened to them or where are they. Often it was very sad work because often the kids were killed
or raped or
whatever.
Yeah.
But she would tell them what happened, but she'd help find cases.
Yeah, yeah. Hard work.
Yeah, it was hard work, but...
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you that back in the late 80s, in that Conversations with Nostradamus book, Nostradamus said that we would shift into the fifth dimension by the year 2038.
All right.
Yeah. And then,
right.
And then, if you read the book, but then if you look at what the message I got about, it was after what's called 311 in Japan, after Fukushima. And they told me the consciousness was rising much faster than expected in the old timelines. And they told me after three, I think it was in 14 or 15, that the fifth dimensional shift would occur by 2028, speeded up by 10 years.
Wow.
And since that time, it has speeded up further. So now we're looking at 2023 to 2024.
Wow.
Eight, 9 months ago, it was 2025, according to Simon Parks, my friend in England. So it's shifting up faster.
I see.
So this whole thing, so we are making right choices.
Awesome.
And the reason why I mentioned Dolores Cannon's work is because by 2000, there was supposed to be a Third World War started in the Balkans in 1995, with many major American cities in flames from nuclear explosions by 2005. And I looked for that, and it didn't happen, because the timelines had changed. And when I first contacted Nostradamus about three, four years ago now, I go back to December 1540, and he's wearing a burgundy cape with a burgundy hat, and he's got he was ripping up all these old quatrains about World War III and Armageddon happening here.
Mm.
And he said, Ted, they're misinterpreting my quatrains. The timelines have changed.
Mm.
And he had this blank parchment paper with a long quill pen. And he looked at me and he said, what kind of world are you and your friends going to make now?
I hate to cut us off, my friends, but this is the first part of a two-part interview I had with Narsim Hiraman in Los Angeles at the Conscious Life Expo a few months ago. I'll be playing the rest of that during the first hour from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific time. So please listen in then for the rest of this fascinating interview. I really like Dr. Hiraman. He's a fascinating fellow, and he's doing things that other physicists just aren't. So please stay tuned to our next hour. I'll be bringing in Pat Donvillo and Michael Mikhail Lund from Vancouver, beautiful Vancouver, Canada, on they're a live water company. They make water using the techniques and technology of a famous Austrian scientist named Victor Schauberger. And there's so much to tell you during the next hour. Please stay tuned. I think you'll find this program simply out of this world. Take care, friends. Please stay tuned. Bye-bye. Uchuu no kanata ni.